It's time again for A Life Well Lived, A Physician's Guide to Wealth with James Nutter. James is a fiduciary financial planner with IM Wealth, whose mission is to help physician families take control of their money so they can live more meaningful lives. If you have an idea for James to explore, please email podcast@financialresidency.com. Now sit back and relax while we dive into today's financial insights with James Nutter.
Hello, everybody, and welcome back to another episode of the A Life Well Lived, A Physician's Guide to Wealth podcast, where our number one goal for you is to help you take control of your money so you can live a more meaningful life. We have a very special guest today, one of my best friends, my business partner, and the founder of our company, IM Wealth, Jeff McPherson. And Jeff, thank you very much for being here. To all of you who may not know, when I was a young, insecure 22-year-old trying to help people with their money when I had no money, Jeff took me under his wing and kind of helped me grow and blossom into the person I become today. I have many great mentors and influential people in my life, but there's no way that I would be on this podcast hosting right now if it weren't for Jeff. So Jeff, thanks for being here, man. This is going to be fun.
Yeah. Thanks for putting it together, man.
Yeah. It'll be absolutely great. Let's just dive right in and let's just talk, you know, right out of the gate. And Jeff and I are going to talk about a variety of topics. We thought we'd just keep it pretty conversational for you guys, but just kind of what we've seen in our experience in working with physicians over the years. And Jeff, are you in your, is it 11th year, 12th year, 10th? I don't even know.
13. Yeah.
13. I was 0 for 4.
Close enough, dude. It's double digits anyways. Yeah.
How about this? I guess share with me a little bit, like what were some of the reasons why you were drawn to working with physicians or why it made sense to kind of like niche in that space?
Yeah, I think we get that question, I feel like, a pretty decent amount just because we have become pretty focused type of audience. But I would say probably, you know, honestly, when I was in my first year, and James, I feel like you know this story for sure, but within my first year, I found myself in a lull, like in the summertime, it was 4th of July week, it was really quiet, and I had like nothing to do, empty calendar, nobody to talk to.
Classic. I remember those days.
Yeah, having a conversation with dad, trying to, you know, figure out how to get myself a little bit more busy. And he actually had suggested what I should do is, and for everybody, you know, listening to this, my dad has been since 1975 and he's just like my hero. And so it just brought me into the business. When I was early on in my career, I would just bug him all the time with questions. But this is one of those moments where I was asking him like, hey, what should I be doing? Because I have nobody to talk to right now. And he was really wise about it. Of course, he had a lot of experience. He just said, why don't you just take some time? This week is always quiet. Everyone's gone. Everyone's on vacation. One, take some time to just enjoy that. And two, if anything, maybe just take a step back and look at where you've had some reasonable success and types of people you've enjoyed working for, what types of people have gained the most value from working with you, and then come back to me and let's talk about it. And so at the time, I mean, I probably only had two doctor clients. And but I had the trend that I saw there was that they were the most engaged people I was working for at the time. They were in their residency. They really wanted to learn about things that they would eventually begin making some really important decisions about. And, you know, that I just felt like the conversation looked a little bit different with them than it did with some of the other people that I had a chance to work for at the time. The one thing that definitely stood out to me the most is the interest level of, you know, making good decisions financially. And so I just thought, okay, well, that's really cool. There's an appetite to do good things. They really value the type of work that we're doing. There's definitely a lot of need out there for people that are in that position. They were, you know, they'd been putting in so many years of training and education and really feeling behind the eight ball as it relates to just planning for the future. And also, honestly, just having creating any type of lifestyle with the very limited free time that they did have. But they were really hungry to learn and to set themselves up for a balanced future, you know? So eventually when they do complete their training and they're signing their first contract to go to work, how to make a good decision with that. in a way that's going to allow them to live a lifestyle that they've waited so desperately long to create for themselves and their family. So I just, you know, even though there was only a couple different families I was working with in that category, I mean, at that time, I probably only had like 10 clients total. So at that point, it was probably like 20% of the people I was working with. But now, you know, of course, it just kind of became something I thought, all right, well, I'm going to really do all the learning I possibly can. So I'm reading all the books about how to, you know, advise physicians, what types of things that they're dealing with. And then also, of course, just because those people were super proactive, they just naturally were the type of people that would start referring their colleagues to us for a similar experience, who also felt, you know, they just wanted to do similar things. As time went by, honestly, it just kind of happened on its own. It just kind of became like a snowball, or there was just momentum there to the point where a few years later, I just decided to, you know, pretty much exclusively specialize in that type of work. And so it's been really good. But it all kind of started with that one week where I had nobody to talk to and just kind of taking a step back and looking at what types of work do I actually enjoy doing. That was just kind of, I guess, a real basic explanation of how we started doing that. And now that's just pretty much our bread and butter. Everything we do all day, every day is coach doctors with their money, and we love it.
I forgot the exact story of your dad and the 4th of July. So that was a nice little refresher for me as well. Yeah. And I think, you know, a lot of what, you know, we've seen, and just so everybody else knows, around the same, that like when I started in this business, probably, you know, 5 years after Jeff was or whatever it might be, I had one friend who happened to be in the same residency program as probably a couple of those clients that Jeff just mentioned, or, you know, some of their referrals. So that's kind of, and I had met Jeff at the same exact time. And that's kind of what like led us on this path going forward together. Yeah. And I feel like, you know, a lot of what we see, even like in America as a whole, we all spend money every single day. We all judge people, whether they're stepping out of a Porsche or like the beat up old Pinto. We all compare and contrast, like keeping up with the Joneses on Instagram all day, every day. And there's really no true education about money. And especially in the medical space, with all of the student debt that physicians have to take on, all of the training that goes into it. And there's really no first world education. And Jeff and I always say that we absolutely believe that you possess a superpower in your specialty as a clinician, and that those same skills can absolutely be applied to your money. And I do think that's why Jeff and I have really enjoyed working in the physician space, simply because we've seen the proactivity, the drive, the growth mindset, like all the different things, and it just having to be redirected to money and watching people grow and flourish has been so joyful for both of us. So switching gears here, Jeff, what are some common mistakes? And I know this is going to be like a general, you know, general question, but maybe some common mistakes that you see physicians making with their money, or maybe even their mindset towards money. Or if you can't think of any specific mistakes, maybe like other potential tips and tricks or whatever it might be.
I would say probably everybody, including myself and James, right? We all have our own unique challenges with, so I don't know. I would say probably the general theme of, again, I guess it could depend on where somebody is in their career, whether you're in just coming out of medical school or just coming out of training and young attending or late career and trying to figure out how, you know, how and when to slow down and all of that. I think the biggest consistent thing that we all struggle with is just our willingness to accept that money is just, that's just hard, right? And so it just, while it's simple, it's not easy, right? It just requires time and space and consistent decision making. I would say probably, like most of us, the number one area where we can all see ourselves falling short of where we possibly could be is where we don't accept the fact that it requires attention. I would say, so I guess maybe an easy way of looking at it might be where we see most of the people that we work for, where they have the most success, would be people that are proactive and want to take, like James, one of the things that I always hear you talking about, more like a preventative, you know, medical approach to your personal finances. So instead of just ignoring the pain, because we all experience different types of pain financially, depending on where we are at a certain chapter of our lives, I think the worst thing we can do is ignore it instead of learning, designating a time and place to learn, especially with couples. I guess the main thing I would say that causes all of us to struggle from time to time is that paralysis that comes with uncertainty. And when people, especially in the medical world, people are so crazy busy all the time. It's like, I can understand how it's more difficult to create the time to really lean into what it takes to just be more confident financially. I think that's the biggest thing, honestly. I don't know what your thoughts are on it, like those mistakes that people make. I think that's the number one thing, is the mistake to not actually work at it consistently. Just like any muscle or any type of like wellness, whether it's exercise, diet, spirituality, like whatever, mental work in your mind and all different types of aspects of just human life. It's just part of life. It's like we all deal with it. We all have an idea of what we want our life to look like. And then we all have time and financial resources to try to bring it to life as best as we can and make a lot of decisions in any given season of life. And yeah, I think the biggest thing would just be all of us struggling from time to time with embracing challenges. What do you think?
I agree. I mean, everything you're saying, I absolutely agree with it. It'd be hard to say, like, you know, what's the number one mistake? But yeah, I think that's a great answer of just like human nature and whole. And for all of you that don't know, I'll probably reference this in a podcast or already have, is, you know, 3 of every 4 American families say money is their number one household stress. So yeah. 3 of all 4 of your friends, money is the number one stress on the home front. And how many of you have heard stories of, you know, physicians making attending salaries, 500K a year or whatever it might be, and still living paycheck to, you know, afford their high consumption lifestyle? We've all heard those horror stories, right? Yeah. So yeah, I think it's like you said, and, you know, human nature is to naturally procrastinate. Even me, I do financial planning for a living. Jeff and I own a business. It's April 1st today. I just started my taxes this last weekend and they're due in 2 weeks, right? I mean, I'll get them done, but it's human nature, right, to procrastinate. So I think it's pretty similar to like what you were saying, like preventative care, as humans, we all know what to do. We all know if we want to be healthy and live a long life, like go to the gym, exercise, move your body, eat clean, take care of your mental health, et cetera. Like we all know to do that, but like what percentage of humans don't do it, right? And I think money is no different. And we all know what we need to do. We all know that we can get better and grow from it. I just feel like, you know, it's like you said, the word proactivity. It's like, are you proactive to life or are you reactive to life? In some areas of life that don't matter as much, you can be reactive. That's fine. Yeah. But some of the areas, like the crucial areas of your life, like money, your relationship with your spouse or partner, your career, your spirituality, your mental health, your physical health, you know, all those different areas of your life, I would definitely encourage you all to be proactive with it. And one thing that I've mentioned in other podcasts, or I don't know if I have yet by the time you're hearing this, is just Google the Wheel of Life. Jeff and I have talked about this before, and you can take like a little quiz. I do it once a quarter. And if you're anything like, essentially the Wheel of Life, all those different categories I just mentioned, money, health, career health, relationship health, family health, et cetera, it'll like, you'll answer questions and it'll give you like a category scoring of like, okay, here's where you're currently rated in all those like key areas of life to be proactive in. And if you're anything like me, like typically every quarter, I do it once a quarter, I find that I'm like, I might be going all in on one area of my life, but like neglecting Steph, my fiance. I mean, not neglecting, but, you know, not as putting as much effort in that area of life, or vice versa. Mm-hmm. So I definitely encourage everybody to look at that too. Anyways, I know we're talking about whole life success now versus just money, but I think it is just overall, it's doing preventative care with the areas of your life that are most important to you as a human being. And that's, you know, I would say that's it. Anything else that you want to add? Otherwise, I'm ready to pivot.
No, I think some other things too that are like, as you're talking, it's even just reminding me of, like, so when you're talking about Wheel of Life and just taking time, right? You're creating the time to check in with yourself and see where you're at with all those different categories. It's just like the story I was told about Dad at the beginning, where it's like, hey, use this as an opportunity to reflect, look at what's working, what's not working, you know, where, like, what are you enjoying about this business, what, you know, or about life, whatever. It's the same kind of thing. So we all just need to get, kind of give ourselves that space for those, like you were describing them as like pillars of humanity, right? I mean, it's unbelievable that we all, I mean, we don't have to adopt, I guess, the belief that money, our decisions that we make with money are, I guess, a pillar of life. But I mean, we could just kind of go live off the land, off the grid and stuff like that. And that's all good too. But, you know, for us, it's unavoidable that for us to exchange our time and resources for lifestyle that we want for ourselves and for our families, like, it's just part of the world we live in. So if we ignore it, time goes by, pain gets stronger. It is not going to go away, just like anything. So it's actually pretty fun too when we have, I mean, you know how it is when we have our quarterlies with our clients and they're coming in, and some of the questions we ask it, you know, before they come in, and we're going to want to know what's changed. Just like when we go, if you go into, you know, you have your primary care physician, you can go see and say, what's changed medically? Or when you go see the dentist, whatever, like they always ask, any new medications, any changes to your phone, like anything that we need to know about, you know, what's like, and then you kind of transition into, okay, well, what's going on in your life right now that you want to build an action plan or not? Right. So it's the exact same kind of experience, only it's just doing it with finances. Right. So having the space to, again, evaluate where your pain is currently and just continually working on getting better. I guess the one thing too, also with what are some common mistakes, is that it can be forever fixed. I mean, it's just like all of the growth stuff that James, like you and I, when we're getting together and we're looking at, you know, we're doing personal development stuff as a team or as individuals, we overcome one challenge and then there's another challenge, and you overcome that challenge, another one. So it's really just embracing the fact that yes, finance, it's difficult. It just requires space and discipline and just a commitment to leaning into it rather than avoiding it. I guess see our clients have the most growth, especially with couples, is when they're willing to go and engage when they both have different thoughts and feelings and goals and concerns around. Yeah, I think it's just the ability to create space for it and the willingness to commit to ongoing improvement and knowing that there's always going to be another challenge. There'll always be another one until the day we die. So just like, I think finding joy in that is something that we're all struggle with, right? It's just like, we all just want to be okay, really pretty much it. But our definitions of what makes us feel okay is different based on the individual. So anyway.
That was great.
That
was great. I mean, it's just like us in business. Every time we solve a problem, another problem comes. And every time we fail, we're going to have to learn from it. And then we're going to fail again. You know, and just like accepting that and embracing it. And the couples and money, we'll do, Jeff and I will do a whole other podcast on that. There's a YouTube video somewhere out there. We did a masterclass webinar on 7 steps to make financial conversations better with your spouse or partner. But anyways, I won't tangent on that for now. And I think another thing, and one of the first things that you taught me, you know, when I kind of taken me under your wing and kind of leading me forward and mentoring me, especially as it relates to physicians, is you talked about unsubscribing from rules of thumb, such as live like a resident, right?
Yeah.
And I think that's something that's really stuck with me, because we're all unique and individual and we all have different relationships and experiences to money. So kind of on the same topic, I do think this is a common mistake that we might see that's a little bit more specialized to physicians. I think what we have seen, and don't get me wrong, we both have read The White Coat Investor. It's a great book. But what we have seen is we've seen clients, typically, they're like around the age of like 40, kind of like when you live like a resident until you're 40, and they're doing really well on paper. And then they come to us and they interview and they're like, I don't know what to do next. I have a bunch of money on paper. My student loans are gone. I'm working a lot of hours and I'm feeling burnt out. And I really don't have any meaning or purpose behind my money. And we've seen that, you know, a variety of times. So not saying that like mindset and lifestyle doesn't work. I think we've just found that if you Google like what to do with my money as a physician, you're just going to be overwhelmed. And it's no different than me Googling, Jeff, when we were together for our team huddle and November or December when I had that cyst on my eye. I randomly got a cyst in my eye. I thought I had pink eye, and I'm Googling it, and then turns out it was a corneal ulcer. And I'm Googling it. And of course, it's like, all right, you might lose your eye. This might happen. That might happen. And then it's like paralysis, overwhelm, freaking out. Yeah. And I really think it's no different. Like any physician listening to this would tell me to never Google my symptoms, right? Yeah. But it's almost unavoidable as a human to not do it. And I think money's no different. You're just going to get a bunch of different opinions and rules to live by. And it's almost like, you know, thou shalt, every physician should be categorized and be a robot and follow, like live like a resident and all these different, like, you know, systems and rules and tax loss harvesting and anyways, all the different things. And I think it's great and it works, but I think it's lacking value and purpose. And I think money is so below the surface for all of us, and everybody has a different background of how they were raised. A lot of physicians might be in America from a different country, and that country has a different outlook on money than America does. We all have unique values. We all have unique strengths, weaknesses, like all these different things. And a lot of what we learned about money growing up came from, like, are still our beliefs today. And like a lot of in our developmental years was like what we saw our parents or whoever raised us, right? So anyways, I just feel like putting everybody in one category and telling every physician to follow X rules, it can put you on a path to burnout, because all the physicians that we work for say, I've already lived like a resident in all of my 20s and 30s. And if I continue that lifestyle, I'm going to burn out. Like, yeah. I want more balance. I want to live more, right? And I think a lot of our, like, even like, you know, I'm a millennial. I think our generation too, as everybody knows, like we want to live more in the present versus kind of that like save, slave, and delay mindset of just like grind your whole life and then retire. And then once you retire, then you can start living. And I think, you know, a lot of people in today's world just like don't view life that way. Anyways, I gave you time to think.
Go ahead.
No, I was just saying, what would you say about that? Because I feel like that is one of the first things you taught me. I vividly remember it, just that we're all unique beings and we all have our unique experiences with money, and rules of thumb can just put you on a path to burnout.
Yeah.
Or paralysis, one of the two.
Well, yeah, I thought it'd be a fun one to pass back to you, because that's an area that I've learned a lot from you. You know, it's just like the importance of finding ways to create space for joy in your life now, right? I think some of the stuff in there, like, yeah, there's a lot of good formulas out there that can, for some people, it's like the best possible thing you should be doing, right? But rules of thumb, I think they just kind of turn into like an easy button, right? Like we all want to kind of find that thing that we can say, okay, I just want to find an easier path forward. Just tell me what to do and I'll do it kind of thing. And that can definitely like help. I mean, that kind of stuff definitely, like, we know it can help people make progress on paper, right? With the balance sheet and their net worth and all of that stuff. But a lot of times when people start doing that stuff, they haven't even thought about where they're going, right? So they don't even, it's really kind of irrelevant at that point. Like they don't have measurable goals that actually matter. They're just following, it's like picking a program based on, again, I hate to always come back to fitness. If you haven't even thought about, if, again, all of us have been there where you think about what, you know, like improving your health, and you just kind of look for, I wish there was an easier way forward. And something was given to you that could be an easy button path that you could just, you know, take a shortcut to get there, then that's great. I feel like where, again, those things fall short is the lack of individuality. I mean, like we all have very unique thoughts and goals and like our upbringing, all the stuff that affects our, the way that we feel and think about money and lifestyle decisions. And if we don't actually embrace that and take the time to reflect about it and then build a game plan moving forward that works for you and only you, or for me and only me, it just feels empty, right? And that's that whole thing you're talking about, people that put their head down, work crazy call schedules, just work as hard as you possibly can to get out of debt as fast as you possibly can, to then, again, like 5 years later, flip the on switch to start living life a little bit. I feel like sometimes what we've seen definitely with people that have got, kind of gone that path, and then they kind of plateau or they're burnt out and they're trying to figure out how to piece their life back together, because it's, they're doing all the right things, but for some reason, it's just leaving people feeling very empty. about like true progress. So yeah, I think the other thing too is just like when people are just getting started and they're kind of taking a path that they're being encouraged to take as it relates to live like a resident and, you know, save absolutely every penny that you're earning and pay off all your debt as fast as you possibly can. Again, there is literally nothing wrong with that at all. And if that was the one thing, or if those types of decisions were in line with what matters most to you as an individual, and it helps, you know, you move forward toward the type of life that you want to live while also just scratching the itch that's the most important thing to you right now, there's nothing wrong with it. But I think that where that falls short is for people who, you know, that maybe that's not the number one thing in their life, and you're making decisions that don't necessarily, I mean, help me out, man. I feel like what I'm trying to say is that if we're making life like altering decisions without thinking about why and just accepting a singular path or a rule or a system without really evaluating it, it's just bound to end with more uncertainty.
Absolutely. You were on the right path with your answer.
Yeah. I mean, I guess the easy, really important, I think, where we've seen people have the most, maybe that's another good way to look at it again, too, is just where we've seen people find the most fulfillment is going to be the people that the couples or the individuals that are willing to invest the time to evaluate what's most important to them and why. How did they even get there in the first place? Why are these my current priorities? Money, let's say. And really just kind of deconstructing all of that stuff, not to say you have to trash it, but just to understand where it's coming from and then moving forward, setting goals that actually, like, as you make progress, it actually matters to you. But honestly, too, it's so fun too when we're like getting started with a new family and they're, let's just say they just made the jump, they're a first year attending, and there's a lot of concern, right? Because it's like, now what? We've been waiting so long to get here. Yeah, we have dreams of how we want to, you know, create a lifestyle and also plan for the future, catch up on retirement, all of that stuff. How do we actually like create a lifestyle right here, right now, without becoming, you know, somebody who's working until, you know, 75, right? Because we absolutely have to, because we're like paying for the transgressions of the past or whatever. But it's so cool, usually, right? When people are getting started, no matter where they are and at a point in life, whether they're in their first year as an attending, or if they're in year 5 or 10 or 15, 20, whatever it is, it's just an opportunity to evaluate and create a plan for moving forward to start making positive changes for you and your family. Most people find that they can actually, and this is where it does get really fun for couples, like where couples just have their own, you know, unique sets of priorities and feelings, right? And so it gives you an opportunity to find out what is possible based on your situation.
So switching gears, and I think the last thing that I would add to that is, you know, just do your best to understand your whys underneath your decision making versus just like following a path. That would, you know, it's no different than why a majority of, you know, diets in America fail, because it's just like following something that has no purpose underneath it and it's not sustainable, right? So just think about that. Every decision that you're making, assess your whys underneath it. So let's switch gears here. And I would say at I Am Wealth, Jeff and I both believe, and of course, we know that physician burnout year after year from the Medscape study of 42% remains consistent almost every single year. From our end, we do truly believe, I know there's a lot of other factors of burnout, but as it relates to money, student loans, from what we've learned, med school loans from our clients, is the number one cause of burnout, right? And I think it's because of the overwhelm. It's like this dark black hole or storm cloud that hangs over your head, and med school or training, or now your current employer likely didn't even teach you how to pay them off. You took them out in med school. You had no clue how much to take out. They didn't give you a budget on what the heck to do about them. So I think from our perspective and from our client's perspective, you know, student loans can be the number one cause of burnout, or even those that feel like they need to work 100 hours a week as an attending after going through that in training in order to pay them off in 2 years. So kind of that like live like a resident mindset. So we've actually created our Meaningful Journeys scholarship, and 1% of all of our net revenue goes to helping med school students. We currently have a partnership with Michigan State's College of Human Medicine. So that's something that we're doing here to proactively, you know, join the fight in what seems to be our client's number one cause of stress and burnout. But let's just talk like maybe general about student loans and like the, you know, of course, the burden is so high, Jeff. I guess what, and I know every situation is unique, right? What advice would you give or suggestions would you give about a physician that might be feeling like maybe they're an attending and they're feeling overwhelmed about, or maybe they're in a residency as well, and they're just feeling overwhelmed about their student loans? Any like general thoughts, or is that too broad of a question?
Yeah, I mean, I think the one thing that it's helpful, but it doesn't always just like fully heal the situation is to try to reframe what student loans actually, you know, like how you, like the perspective that the people have surrounding their student debt. I mean, there's just no way around it. For a lot of people, it's just a huge number. You know, it's just an obligation. It's stressful. But we do try to reframe it first by looking at it like an investment. This might sound just like really ridiculous, but you and I talk about it all the time with clients. Mm-hmm. Is, you know, there's no, like, let's just pretend somebody has $300,000 in student loan debt. And maybe their annual income as an attending is like, you know, 300, 400, 500, whatever. There's literally no investment currently trading out there in the world that you could take. You could write a check for $300,000, sink it into a bucket, flip the on switch and get that type of return year after year. There's nothing out mm-hmm. there like that. If there was, we wouldn't be, you know, here right now. We'd all be doing the same thing. All right. Of us would be finding that magical bucket. It's such a wonderful investment. You know, over time, eventually, it will be gone, right? I mean, that's just the way it works. But it's still a thing, right? So yeah, that sounds really nice and idealistic to view it as an investment. That is really, I mean, it is truly how it works. But still, I think the thing that like presents the most challenging part for a young doctor is coming out with that type of student loan debt and that kind of just pressure that's there to find the highest paying job possible so that you can, yeah, you've been putting in your undergrad, grads, med school, now residency, maybe some years of fellowship. And it's like, finally, you have this huge opportunity to try to flip that on switch for as much as you can so that you can make the payments on the student loan debt comfortably. And then also hopefully be able to start living life a little bit. And where I feel like it's just so challenging is those numbers. I mean, they can be for the last few years. I mean, it's been pretty conveniently on pause, right? But for people as that started to turn back on now, those are real numbers that people are paying off every single month. So maybe it's like $5,000 a month or whatever it is, going towards your student loan debt. And it's like, okay, now that I have that, I have the mortgage and I have to like, you know, have just basic living expenses. And at the end of the day, what do I actually have left to do anything that I actually enjoy? Mm-hmm. And so that puts people in a really tough spot because they've worked so hard for so long and they want to create, you know, somewhat of a balanced lifestyle for themselves and their families. And they find themselves trying to take the highest paying job they can get. And meanwhile, sometimes that puts them in a spot where you're working like the craziest call schedules and totally out of your, you know, I mean, you just have to be there and have to do it because it's what puts food on the table and it's what pays for the kids' college and all of that type of stuff. I feel like that's probably the hardest part is just when people are done with training and it's time to make a decision about, oh yeah, why did I do this again? How do I find the best opportunity that I can be compensated fairly for all the, you know, years that I put in and also be able to have time with my family and have the ability to grow for the future so I don't have to work forever. So I think it's just unavoidably for, you know, and there are like unique situations where people come out of training with no debt, you know, but most people, that's not the case. I think that's why, again, why we've tried to start, you know, building the scholarships so that we can grassroots level try to help, you know, alleviate that pressure one relationship at a time. Because nobody really, you know, I mean, you really start talking with people that are in medicine, they get into it because they want to help people and they find themselves making sometimes what like feels like just cutthroat business decisions all the time. And it's all about, you know, finding the best contract versus where am I going to be able to bring my skill and my passion to the world best and also maintain my family life, right? So.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Oh, I love what you said too, just about the investment back into yourself. And that would be one wheel on the wheel of life that you've already invested a bunch into.
Yeah.
And just, you know, let's say you had 300,000 in the market and you're in 10%, which would be a, you know, a great return for the market. I'm doing like little quotes, right? That'd be like 30K a year. I do agree. Like when you look at it from that lens, it definitely, I mean, I've had people say, oh, I never thought about it that way. That definitely helps alleviate things. So I agree. I absolutely agree with everything that you're saying. And I think the only thing that I would add to it is once again, figure out what your other top goals are and where you are in life. Like if you have a family and kids versus if you're a brand new attending and you're single or wherever, you know, wherever, figure out where you're at in life and what your main priorities need to be and what your main goals are, whether it's retirement, paying off your student loans, dream, like taking milestone family trips while you're young or while your kids are young or when they get to a certain age or before you have kids. The dream house that you want in 5 years, like, do you want a cottage? And, you know, assess kind of where all your goals are between now and retirement. And then we typically encourage clients like every single time, we won't even create a financial plan for them until they put their goals in priority order. So then we can kind of help give them advice. Like if student loans is one on the list, that live like a resident mindset might work, right? Versus if it's like number five or six behind travel, kids, college, et cetera, then it's a little bit more of like a balancing act, right? Of like maybe pay them off over 10 years. Anyways, I won't get too into the weeds with all that. I know another thing. I mean, do you want to keep going on loans
I'm glad you brought it back to that of like the practicality of, because I just felt like what I was just talking about there was just the pressure that's there. So, okay. So like what to do about it, right? We're just talking about that. Yeah. And it is what it is. It's a big deal. So I would say that, you know, what people find to be the most helpful, just like anything with financial planning, is just looking at all the scenarios, feeling empowered to know what the future looks like, assuming different types of decisions that could be made. And so we generally, when we look at even just that category alone, we can look at it one of three ways. And the first way would be what's most emotionally satisfying, which is just demolishing the student loan debt as fast as possible, right? Just like crushing it hard and fast. And then, you know, then the other extreme of that scenario would be the most bold and calculated mathematical way. What's the way that we can pay the least back into this program as possible over time and to maximize our investments, right? Like if somebody has $5,000 a month or $10,000 a month that they can do something with, right? Where are they going to put it? Are they going to just put all of it towards student loan debt and just knock it out as fast as possible? Are they going to put all of it towards the future for retirement or somewhere in between, right? So, I mean, again, it's like sometimes people want to be super cold mathematical about it and say, all right, well, what's the interest rate on student loan debt? What's the interest rate that I can earn in the market? If it's better in the market, I'm going to make minimum payments on the debt and I'm going to put more emphasis on my brokerage accounts or real estate or whatever the heck people choose to invest in. And over time, you know, will net a better result potentially, right? So sometimes people want to know what's the best math for me uniquely, for my situation, for my goals, for my current lifestyle, for my future lifestyle. Some people want to just crush the debt, go all in assault on the debt right away. And then when they're done, shift their attention towards the future. But what most people find is they're somewhere in the middle. Right. Uh-huh. Most people land somewhere in the middle where they want to focus on lifestyle now, growing for the future, making sure they're putting enough away into their retirement plans or brokerage or whatever they're investing in, while also paying the debt down, hopefully sooner than later. So again, that's where financial planning comes in, but it has to be driven by what's most important to the family. But as soon as people can actually see, like here's a classic example, if we look at one of the extremes. So if we look at, you know, a recent couple that we actually started working for about a year ago, and we see this, you know, regularly, but I actually been thinking about them because they're coming in for a meeting next week. So anyways, I remember the first time that we had kind of just got up on a grease board and you're like figuring out, okay, what would it look like as we first started working for them? They had about $250,000 in student loan debt. And it had about 10,000 a month that they had currently been throwing at the debt, right? And they're like, is this wise? Are we hurting ourselves for retirement by putting so much attention on these student loans? Because they didn't even have to make payments, right? So when everything was paused by the government. And so their question was, okay, we know when we want to retire, we know how much money we want to live on when we get there. So knowing that, are there any negative implications of us continuing on this pace that we're doing with student loans for the next 2 years? Because the way that they were doing it was they were going to be on pace to pay off their student loans and just a little bit over a couple of years, because they were expecting to get some big chunks that they're going to throw at it as well, in addition to their $10,000 a month. But that was going to put them on pace to be done. And then their objective at that point in time was to kind of like train track shift all that free cash flow toward retirement. And their concern was, is that 2 years going to make or break our retirement plans? And so, I mean, all we did was we just looked at those scenarios. So let's just pretend, and we even just like extremely shut off we modeled into a scenario that they wouldn't put any money into 403B or any money into Roth, even though they're still doing those things. We just wanted to model it to say, we're not saving anything for 2 years. And for them, the way it worked, the math was still so that they were like statistically hitting all of their retirement goals and then some, if they were to do that, just spend all of their time and money on getting out of debt as fast as possible. And then in 2 years, redirect that free cash flow towards retirement. They were nailing everything. The only thing, so like, okay, so where is there an actual negative implication? The only thing that's like faltering at all is what's left in the huge pot of money at death at age 100. So it's like, that's not a concern for them, right? There's still going to be plenty left over in the bucket when their time here is done, right? But that was the only material difference, was what's left behind for next generation at death. And it's not like they weren't going to be leaving a serious legacy behind. So for them, that added so much peace of mind. And it's, again, they're putting money away into retirement accounts. We just gave them, here's like an extreme scenario. If you were to not save at all. And so for them, they have a plan. They know what it looks like. They're aggressively paying down student loan debt. They're still saving for retirement. Everything's cool. So it's just knowing, what does it look like? So just taking the time to evaluate things, I think, is the solution. Build a plan, whether it's super aggressive toward paying it off, super aggressive toward not, or somewhere in between where most people fall, but should be unique to the person, to the family.
Absolutely. No, that's a great story. And all that I'll add, because I know compliance is going to listen to this, is that is not a direct recommendation either. You need to evaluate and assess what is most important to you and your goals, and actually crunch the numbers like we did for our clients to be able to look and see and help them make, an informed decision that they feel empowered to make.
Yeah.
All right. You're welcome, compliance. And then I think we're getting close to the end here. So maybe one last question. And if you want me to skip over the question I ask you and ask you a different one, just let me know. So I'm sure most of you don't know, this will be fun. So Jeff's wife, Michaela, hi, Michaela, she's currently in medical school. And this was like new since Jeff started specializing in physicians. It kind of just worked out that way. So Jeff, what would you say? And I know I'm putting you on the spot here. We didn't prep for this question. What's like the number one thing you've learned about, I guess, just like being in a physician family since, you and Michaela got married and kind of being on that journey with her? Like, is there any like major takeaways as it relates to life, money, anything specific like that come to mind? And then this would be a cliffhanger maybe for like the financial conversations with a loved one podcast that we do sometime soon.
That's a great, that'd be a great segue into another one. I think the biggest thing for me is just and we're in the middle of medical school right now, and I'm just blown away with like the amount of, just like the weight of how, I don't know. I mean, I guess that's a really good question. I think the biggest thing that I've noticed is just the intensity of what medical school looks like. And then also just kind of moving into what the future is going to be. It's just, for me, it's made me realize that I didn't really know nearly as much as what I thought I did, just from, you know, secondhand stories from clients talking about what medical school was like or what training was like. And I know we've got a road ahead of us with navigating just 1 week at a time. And, you know, honestly, like, one of the things that we've really tried to do is make sure that we're carving out space, you know, so that we can still maintain somewhat, you know, like, a normal lifestyle. Granted that the season that we're in right now just requires so much energy, so much focus. Yeah. So when we have like family huddles on a weekly basis and we look at the upcoming week and just kind of have total clarity of, okay, what's your week look like? How can I best be a support system for you this week? All of those different things. It's just like been very eye-opening to see how much really goes into a career in medicine, and we're just getting started, you know? So I just have, it's given me so much more respect and appreciation for that feeling that is there for people that are finally done with their training, that are so longing for a real, like, the American life.
Yeah.
Like, there was that one time, I think I told you about, it was like a Saturday or Sunday afternoon, and it was when the weather was first breaking here in Michigan, for those of you that are listening to this. In the springtime, it's like everybody in the state of Michigan is desperate for the sun to finally come back out. But there was a weekend, there was a Sunday, maybe like a couple months ago, where we had a reasonable, like, but pretty decent weather. And there was a bunch of like kids out in the little neighborhood, like kind of running around or playing on their little bikes or whatever. And I saw Michaela looking out the window, just watching, like, just kind of, you know, observing it. And I remember talking with her, and she's just like, I just can't wait to, you know, have a life again. And so it's really eye-opening to see just how much it really does require of people, just to see her and see her classmates, you know, just really grinding it out. It's been very humbling to feel like, I thought that I had a pretty decent idea of what it was like for the people that were already in our lives, but I had no clue, you know, none.
Yeah. Thank you for sharing that. And Michaela, if you're listening to this, if you have any free time to do so, no, I'm just kidding, but you're an absolute warrior and a trooper. And thank you for giving Jeff a lot more than me, but Jeff, of course, plays a telephone game and lets me know about the grind. And to everyone else listening, just know we see you and we respect you. And we know that you are all grinders. You're here right now, especially if you're here listening and you made it all the way to this moment at the end of the podcast. We, you know, we see you. Thank you for being growth minded. And Jeff, I know we're at our time, so thank you so much for being here. And of course, we'll be doing more episodes. And to everybody listening, as always, as I always share, you know, take out your notes app on your phone or your journal or notebook or whatever, or just do something. Like, what's one thing from today's episode that you can just take action on in the next 24 hours? Don't try to do everything at once. Just one thing that you can take with you in the next 24. And Jeff, anything else to say? Are you feeling good?
What's one thing? I mean, we can participate maybe in that too. What do you think? What's your key takeaway? And then I'll have to think about one too.
I think, I mean, we all know the importance of time and space. So my fiance, Steph, and I just got engaged about a month ago, and we're kind of in that, like, you know, I'm sure everyone's experienced it. Like, when's the date? When's the date? When's the date? So I think I'm going to schedule time and space, which, nudge, I've already scheduled it tonight to just sit down and talk about our dreams for our wedding and start putting together a plan of, we want X venue versus X venue, and start gathering, like, reaching out to vendors, gathering price quotes. Cause we've definitely heard some people who have, like, booked a venue and didn't figure out what everything else cost. And now they're, like, locked in and, like, oh crap, this is going to be a lot of money. So building a plan and creating structure and time and space can set you free. That was full circle, baby.
Nice. Nice.
What about you?
Yeah. I think for me, I know this upcoming weekend, we actually have, I guess we're saying, what's your key takeaway? We're both highlighting things that are already there. Classic. So, yeah. Well, but I would say this, I haven't mapped it out yet, but I know this Saturday and Sunday, yeah, Mikhail and I were going to try to do something fun, right? And so it's like, okay, we have to, you know, almost like plan that in, right? So I think just one thing that I'll do is I'll come to her with a proposal of sorts and just say, hey, you know, what do you think about this for Saturday and this for Sunday? And so it's not, we're not waking up Saturday morning and saying, okay, what do we want to do? And then nothing happens. So yeah, I think that would be my one challenge and takeaway is to make sure that, you know, we've had this weekend on the calendar for a long time.
Nice.
But we still haven't because we've just been, you know, we've both been busy and stuff. So yeah, we'll just map something out so that we can make the absolute best experience we can with this weekend, being that, again, she's just been nonstop, just every day, just going after it. So it'd be cool for me to take initiative on that and plan something special for her.
The entrepreneur and the med school student don't know what to do in their free time. That's weird. No, I'm kidding. That's awesome. One other thing too, it is April 1st today. You're probably listening to this later, obviously. No April Fool's jokes or anything. I should have. I just thought of it. But I got to go back. It's the end of the quarter. So I'm going to go through my wheel of life assessment as well and kind of see what areas I need to double down on in the next quarter that I might be currently lacking in. So there's another thing. But anywho, I know you got to get running. Thank you so much. You're the man. And I will see you soon on another episode. And for all listeners, thank you very much for being here. And we will see you very soon on the next episode of A Life Well Lived. Have a great day. Cheers, everybody.
Awesome. Thank you.